edition of the Hagmann Report. I want to mention that portion of tonight's broadcast brought to you by Ready Made Resources. You know, I'll tell you something. You heard Alicia Powell talk about EMP, the EMP concerns, not new. I'll tell you that. How prepared are you? How prepared can you be? I think so. Folks, readymaderesources.com. Bob Griswold, that's the one-stop shop for everything you need to be prepared, readymaderesources.com. And one of the very, very high market, high demand, actually a couple areas, and that's the night vision equipment, which I like to call the great equalizer against, you know, the mobs out there, and essential for security, and also the communications, ham radio, for example. And the more I learn about ham radio, the more I like it. So, look, whether it is storable food, long-term storable food, water purification, or whatever it might be, Ready Made Resources. Go there. Also, mention that you heard this endorsement on the Hagmann Report, Ready Made Resources. You can call Bob Griswold at 800-627-3809, or just go to readymaderesources.com. And again, make sure you mention Hagmann. Go ahead.
Go to HagmannReport.com and check out Peter Chowka's new article.
Yes.
Watch out. All is not what you see in the Al Franken story. There he details an interview which CNN conducted with the journalist Leanne Tweeden. And he details the story of the Al Franken and how there's more to the story. I have not read the whole article. But absolutely will. That's on HagmannReport.com. And this is, you know, we continue to see the tale of the hypocrisy of the media. We have all these media outlets that are, you know, basically protecting or saying Al Franken was a mock groping. It was a joke, you know, downplaying it while they turn around and bash Trump.
I can see that, but
I can
in a sense. Okay, because
argument.
Of Franken. Yeah, I understand the argument too. But, you know, doesn't make it right.
No. It's just the, you know, the double standards that we see in the media. And it's just going to continue. There's no end in sight. Also on
Wait a second. I do want the names of all the settlements that our tax dollars paid for from congressmen. I want complete transparency and exposure. I want to know who. I want to know how much. And I'm referring to the report that how many millions upon millions of dollars in settlements were paid out by members of the Congress.
$17 million over 260 settlements.
So,
and that stretches from 1997 to 2017. So far this year, there have been nine.
Name them and shame them.
In Congress paying out almost $1 million.
And you got Senator Bob Menendez, of course, that trial got, that was a hung jury.
Mistrial
by it because of a hung jury. Mm-hmm. Big surprise there. Now, do you know if they're gonna, refile the, or are
they haven't said yet. No.
Okay. That's always a concern, especially given the venue, where it's being held. You know, it's just kind of when you deal with the court system, but I do hope they will pursue that. Now, our guest right now is Doug Papa. If you've never heard of this man, his resume is stellar. He is a U.S. Army military police veteran. He's a former law enforcement officer, a criminal investigator, and private sector security and investigations management professional with over 40 years of experience, including work as the director of security for the Las Vegas Riviera Casino, where he exposed wrongdoing in 1986. He was awarded the Criminal Investigative of the Year designation by the Loudoun County Sheriff's Office in Virginia for his undercover work in narcotics enforcement, 91, and again in 92. Mr. Papa testified under oath that exculpatory evidence was withheld from the defense by the prosecutor and sheriff's office officials during the 1988 trial of a man accused of attempted murder of his wife that led to his conviction. So, you've got to look at this and wow, okay. As a result, Mr. Papa's testimony, by the way, the man was ordered released from prison, given a new trial in 1992, and found not guilty. So, both sides of the spectrum here. Now, Mr. Papa became the subject of a local and national news media attention, which led to the demise of his 12-year police career. After losing his job, by the way, at the request of the FBI, Mr. Papa infiltrated in an undercover capacity a group of men who were plotting the kidnapping of a DuPont Chemical fortune heir and his wife in 1992. His stories have been featured on Inside Edition, A Current Affair, CBS News Street Stories with Ed Bradley. So, I mean, you get in the picture here? He spent 20 years in the hotel casino business as the director. He writes for the Baltimore Post-Examiner. Now, we asked him to come on to talk about Las Vegas, about the security, about the whole situation with Las Vegas. However, full stop at the moment. We just found out today, when exclusives are not so exclusive, the Sylvester Stallone sex scandal story that the UK Mail Online forgot to attribute properly. The exclusive: how Sylvester Stallone was accused of sexually assaulting a 16-year-old fan. Police report reveals girl claims star made her give him his bodyguard oral sex, threatened that they would beat her head in if she ever told. This can be found on the Daily Mail. But here's the key. Daily Mail would not have a story if it were not for Doug Papa. Daily Mail never attributed the information to Doug Papa, who was the originator of what you're hearing and what you're seeing in the mainstream media. My word. With that, we want to welcome Doug Papa to the program. Doug, thanks for joining us.
Good evening, gentlemen. Nice to be with you. Can you hear me okay?
We can. We can hear you. We can see you. You're looking good, sounding good. Yeah, what's up with this? You did the legwork. You did the revelation. You exposed this. You were behind. You were the guy behind Stallone's stuff,
right?
And never got. So help me out. Start there. What happened?
In 2014, I got a lot of law enforcement friends retired. I met thousands of cops over the years in my career, and then also in the law enforcement industry, and then, in the security industry and in law enforcement. I was talking to a couple of cops retired from California. This was in late 2014. And they were telling me some stories. They said, Sylvester Stallone is not the person people think he is. I'm not going to use cuss words on the show, but for lack of better words, he's not a good human. Alleged sexual violations with women and specifically some young girls. So they told me a couple of stories, couldn't, verify anything. So what I did was, towards the end of 2014, I went on the internet and I just started researching his history. And I found some stuff that was questionable, arrest for steroid possession in Australia, some allegations from some other women referenced that sexual misconduct and stuff like that. I think one was a model in 2001 that said he ripped her clothes off and pushed her up against the wall in a gym. And this was all stuff that was coming off, I call white intelligence. It's coming off the internet and different news agencies and stuff that came out. So started compiling all the stuff. And through the research, I saw that in 2013, the New York Post, page 6, the section of the New York Post, published a story that, according to them, there were allegations that he molested his half-sister. Her name was Toni Ann Filiti. She was an actress, really good-looking woman, that he allegedly molested her while she was a kid for a couple of years. And they had a document, and somebody came forward, but they didn't release who came forward. They didn't release a document, but they said there was some type of trial, civil papers that were filed and a lawsuit. So I compiled all that stuff, and I started writing the story. It was rather lengthy. And then I remembered an incident that happened 25 years prior. When I came to Las Vegas, the first place I worked when I came here, once I lost my job in the police department after the undercover investigation was done with the FBI, I spent about a year out in Colorado while they're flying me back to testify in the federal trial for the conspirators of the kidnapping case. So anyway, I made it out to Las Vegas. I opened up the MGM Grand in 1993, started out as a security officer, and then went to investigations pretty fast. Some of the guys I worked with were retired police officers, some of them from the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. Anyway, long story short, we had all the Tyson fights back in the 90s were scheduled at the Grand Garden Arena, which was part of the MGM Grand. So when the celebrities came in, the investigators were always assigned to some of the higher profile celebrities as, you know, as bodyguards to be with them, you know, while they're going to the fights. And so anyway, Dave Austin was the director of security, executive director of security, and actually vice president, executive vice president of security and surveillance. He passed away a few years ago from cancer, a really nice gentleman. So he came in, he started giving the investigators their jobs, and he says, Doug, you're going to be with Drew Barrymore. Stay with her because she doesn't like when photographers put cameras in her face. So sit with her to the boxing, make sure she's okay. And he was can't ask for other assignments. So goes to this one guy, John, who's a retired Metro officer out here. And he says, John, you're going to be with Sylvester Stallone. Now I'm going to leave all the cuss words out because I know we're on the air. Right. So for lack of better words, John said, I wouldn't walk Sylvester Stallone that blank to the toilet.
Mm.
Get somebody else. So Dave looked at him. We all looked at him like, you know, what's going on? So Dave says, excuse me. He goes, I wouldn't walk him and bodyguard him anywhere. And he was pretty descriptive in his language. So Dave just looked, and he said, okay. He gave it to another investigator. John got some other celebrity. Anyway, the fights came and went. And then the following week, I was in the same role in the same office in investigations. John was on the end. So it was nobody in there. It was me and him. And I said, John, what happened Saturday night? Why didn't you want to, you know, bodyguard Stallone and be with them? So, of course, you know, a lot of expletives and cuss words and stuff like that. And basically what he said was, you know, I wouldn't go near this guy. I wouldn't bodyguard him. He's basically, for lack of better words, a piece of crap. He should be in prison. He should be a convicted sex offender. So he goes on, and I said, what are you talking about? So he says, you know, before I retired, I was the supervisor in the sexual assault detail at the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department. I said, no, you talked about it. So I said, what's going on? He says, well, now he's telling me, this is the late 90s, okay, when he's telling me this. And he says, before I retired, 85 or 86, he said, Stallone was making a movie at the Las Vegas Hilton. It's now called the Westgate Hotel, but back then it was the Hilton. And there's this 15, 16-year-old girl who was a fan. Anyway, he makes contact with her. They get her up to the room, him and his bodyguard. Now I know the bodyguard's name was Michael DeLuca. Back then, I think he said the last name, DeLuca. And I said, what happened? He says they had group sex with her, oral sex. He masturbated in front of her on the floor, on the wall. And I'm listening to this, and I'm saying, Stallone? He goes, yeah. And I said, what happened? He says, well, police came out. They did an investigation, and then it got assigned to the sexual assault detail, and detectives were assigned. They interviewed the girl. The girl was, you know, traumatic, nervous. She didn't want to press charges. She was scared, so there was no prosecution. And he said, but the sheriff at the time was John Moran. John Moran passed away years ago. He was a sheriff at the time that this happened. And he said Moran was so ticked off that there was going to be no charges pressed that when Stallone came in town to do the movie, his bodyguard, Michael DeLuca, applied for a temporary concealed weapons permit from the sheriff from Clark County. And the sheriff told the cops, the detective, he says, you go down to the Hilton and you get that. I'll leave all, I'm not going to cuss tonight. He says, go back and get that permit and pull it and tell him that if we ever catch him or any of his people in Clark County carrying a concealed weapon, they're going to get locked up. So they went down and they did it. And now he's telling me the story and I'm looking at him and, you know, I always liked Stallone. I liked his movies, you know, years ago. And then he tells me, he goes, you know, Doug, since that happened, I never watched another Sylvester Stallone movie. I can't even stand to see his face on television. And I said, man, I just couldn't believe it. So anyway, came and went. A couple days later, I'm sitting in the office, and he comes in with his briefcase, and he opens up the briefcase, and he throws down this 12-page police report, which is a copy of what's floating around on the Internet. And he says, read it, but don't copy it. And I'm going to be sitting over there. So I read it, 12 pages, and it's even more graphic than what he described. And I just can't believe it. And it's got Sylvester Stallone named out as a suspect, Michael DeLuca. And I'm just reading this, and I said, how the hell did this never hit the press? He says, well, the girl didn't press charges, and, you know, it looked like the original report. And he says, it is the original report. Wow. I says, well, why do you have it? And he says, because when it was all over with, the sheriff said, being that it was Stallone, he wasn't pressing charges, don't put it into the system or something like that. Do what you want with it. So just to cover his butt, he kept it all those years. So I read it, and now I'm like, I just couldn't believe it. So I read it, I gave it back to him. that was the end of that. So that explained why he didn't like Sylvester Stallone. Now, like I said, that was 25 years ago. It was in the late 90s. So sure. Going back to the story from 2014, compiled all the stuff off the internet about him, and I said, I'll do a story. Then I remembered, you know, what John had told me 25 years ago. So I called him up, and I said, hey, John, are you aware? You know, I talk fast sometimes. I said, are you aware that less than a year after Stallone, you know, when we were working at the MGM, and he showed me the report, he goes, yeah. He said, what's up? I said, do you know less than a year after that incident with this 15, 16-year-old girl, his sister filed civil charges against him, and the whole thing was covered up. He paid millions of dollars, supposedly, because she was being molested by him while she was growing up. And he just went nuts. And he says, no, I never heard of that. He says, so what's going on? I says, well, I'm, you know, I write for the Baltimore Post-Examiner sometimes, and I'm writing this story about Stallone, and I want to put the paragraph. Now, I didn't have the report at this time. So I said, I want to put the last paragraph in and mention the incident of the Las Vegas Hilton. So I did. It was a couple of sentences. And he said, go ahead. You know, if anybody gives any flack, I'll back you up because, you know, it happened, and I got the report and all this. So I said, do you have the report? He says, yes, but I don't know where it was. So that's now, I think it was the end of 2014. The story came out, I think, in January or February of 2015. So they published a story, and it was titled, Did Sylvester Stallone Molest His Half-Sister? Okay, so that came out. And, of course, when I write stories, I write a lot of stories about police corruption and stuff that, you know, really from my heart that concerns me. So, you know, I get a lot of hate mail. I get, you know, emails from people, conspiracy theorists. I kind of ignore all that stuff. But there was a couple of people that write me, and one or two in particular appeared they were genuine. And they said that they had information that nobody else has got, and it never came out in the press. So end up making contact with the sources, the confidential sources, and then one of them told me that they have the actual sealed documents going back 30 years to 87, because the whole thing was sealed, and they said he paid her off $2 million plus $66,000 and some change every month for the rest of her life, plus every year she'll get $50,000 for medical and psychological bills and stuff like that. And they said this never came out when the Post and the New York Post did the story. They don't have these documents. So, long story short, ended up making a telephone conversation, put me in touch with some other people. Anyway, they FedExed me all the documents, and I looked at it and verified they were genuine. And they also had a copy of the actual $2 million check that was made out to Tony Anfalitti, which was his half sister, from the attorney.
Wow.
So, yeah, I started writing the site. I pulled the paper up. I said, you ain't gonna believe what I got. I got all this stuff. Doing more research and talking to the sources, they told me, do you know that Sylvester Stallone's, this is just unbelievable. To this day, this blows my mind. Do you know that Sylvester Stallone's stepdad, who married his mother, Jackie Stallone, I think in the late 80s, is a medical doctor? I said, no, I'm not aware. And these are my sources telling me. And they said, do you know he was charged with murdering his dead wife.
Wow.
What? Well, this gets bad. So I get more documents from them. I got documents from the California Board of Medicine. I tracked all the stuff down, and it's a pretty lengthy story. So in a nutshell, what happened was, and I put this in the story, it's some period of time, I think it was the late 80s, his name is Dr. Michael Levine, if I remember correctly. Still married, I believe, and still a practicing medical doctor, which just blows my, I just can't believe it. Well, anyway, what happened was he was charged with murder for giving inordinate amounts of Demerol to his wife, and she died. They did an autopsy. They charged him with murder. They charged his brother, I don't remember his name, who's another doctor, who falsified the death certificate saying she died from some coronary or seizure when she actually died from the overdose. And I guess when they did the autopsy, and this is all in my story. I had it all documented, and I got all the documents. And I guess when they did the autopsy, now I don't have any notes in front of me. I talk right from what's in my memory.
Sure.
And I believe it was 24 to 48 times the normal prescribed amount that a doctor would prescribe to a patient for Demerol. So they charged him with murder. Okay. And they charged the brother with accessory because he falsified the death certificate and covered up actually the reason why she died. All well and fine. Now you would think that the guy would have been in jail for many years, and he would have lost his medical license.
Yep.
Well, it didn't happen like that. He ends up pleading to involuntary manslaughter. I believe he got 5 years probation. The California Board of Medicine, if I remember correctly, pulled his medical license for a couple of months. Then they gave it back to him. But what even makes it worse is during this investigation with the California Board of Medicine, I guess he had applied to renew his DEA. It's called a CSA certificate or something, so he can prescribe, you know, the DEA controlled substances right. to patients.
Right.
And they found out that when he applied, one of the questions was asked, did you ever falsify documents or something like that? And I guess he put no. He put yes on part of it, no on the other. And they actually found out that through the investigation, this is all my story, that what he did lie, because what he lied about was that he falsified the report to the DEA for the reapplication, the way I understand it, because when he was giving his wife these Demerol pills, he put somebody else's name down as the patient, and they found out that the name is in my story, but I don't remember it offhand. So basically, was instead of filling prescriptions out, because there were so many of them for his wife, he makes up this guy's name. I think it was Robert Kaufman. It's just a phony name.
Sure.
Well, they found out that that's all fictitious and false. So he was charged with that also, including with the murder charge. And then the address he put down for this guy Kaufman, and I remember this from memory, was a really high-priced home in Beverly Hills that was abandoned for years. So that was all part of the investigation. So they end up charging him with that, you know, the fictitious stuff. So they pulled his license, I believe, for a couple of months. I don't believe he spent any time in jail. They gave him 5 years probation. He got his medical license back, and he's still to this day a practicing medical doctor. And I even put in my story when I wrote it, I just couldn't believe it. I just don't understand how you go from a murder charge for murdering your wife by giving her all this Demerol. And then they take a plea bargain for an involuntary manslaughter, and I think he was on 5 years probation. Well, anyway, they pulled his license for a couple of months, and he gets the license back. So that's part of the second story. And I think the second story, when the paper published it, they published a copy of the $2 million check with Stallone's face next to it, and I think the title of the story was Sylvester Stallone's Hush Money Leaves Unanswered Questions. So when I got all these documents, they were all supposed to be sealed. And part of the sealing of the documents and her getting all this money was that there were supposed cassette tapes that came out of a telephone answering machine right when she started accusing him of molesting her and raping her and all this when she was a kid. And allegedly on the tapes are Jackie Stallone and Frank Stallone, his brother, talking about how they're going to fix the problem with Tony Anfalitti. And part of the settlement that was sealed, and I had all the records, I put this in my story, was that those tapes were supposed to be turned over. Now, my sources told me the tapes were turned over, but there's still copies out there. And I got an idea, and I can mention the name of who still has them. So, you know, since then, even the other day, someone called me up and said, hey, we're still working on tapes. But you give me the tapes, we'll have it analyzed to see who the voices are, and we'll publish it. So those tapes are still floating around. Now, one of my sources told me that those tapes exist because Mark Geragos, the attorney from California, was Tony Anfalitti's, so that's Sloan's half-sister, the one they did the sexual assaults on. He was her attorney, and he actually listened to some of those tapes. How he got the tapes and who gave them to him, I don't know, but my sources, when I talked to him, said that Mark Geragos actually listened to those tapes. And what I was told over the years since I wrote those stories, that these allegations about his sister, and there's also other allegations that I'm not going to mention names, with other sexual misconduct with other women, is the biggest open secret in Hollywood. That what he's done over the years, everybody knows about, and nobody really cares. They don't talk. It's like a secret that's not really a secret. So I wrote the story. I wrote the second story, and it came out. And then some of the sources were talking to me and telling me, because they're close to, you know, people in his family and stuff, that he was really upset about the stories. And he started blaming family members that they were the ones releasing the information to me. And I guess he started blaming Tony Anfalitti's son, Ed Felitti. He was in his 20s. I think he's a young, you know, in his 20s today, somewhere around there. because after the page six story in the New York Times came out, Ed Felitti, who's the son of his half-sister, told the press that up until the time she died on a deathbed, he said, my uncle Sylvester Stallone molested my sister when she was a kid. The son said that on the record, okay? My sources were telling me that was in 2013. Now, my stories come out 3 years later, and from what I'm hearing, him and his brother are all upset about it. They're trying to find out who's releasing documents to me, and they supposedly started threatening Ed. They want Ed to change his story and stop talking about what he's telling them, that, he molested his sister. And so that's what was going on after I wrote the story. And there was a lot of drama, and there's a lot of other stuff going on that I can't talk about it because there may be another story down the road. And I got to protect confidential sources and stuff like that. So anyway,
wow.
Go ahead.
Well, no. Did Stallone ever contact you and tell you to stop it? Or did he have any contact with you at all during this process?
No, matter of fact, the paper thought that they would get some type of contact either from him or not from him, from his attorney or something. Now, every story I wrote, his attorney back 30 years ago was Martin Singer, and my contacts were telling me it was still Martin Singer. He's a high-profile attorney. And I tried to make contact with Mr. Singer. I called up, talked to the secretary, told him I was writing the story, and he never called me back. So I know personally from what sources close to the family are telling me that regardless of what he said the other day about the first time you heard about the story with the story I wrote last year, Sylvester Stallone, as far as I know, from my source telling me, is fully aware of who I am and all these stories that I've written on him. I wrote 5 stories on him so far, including the one that was yesterday. So anyway,
where can people find these stories too that you've written, just to be clear?
Okay, if you go to the Baltimore Post-Examiner website, Baltimore Post-Examiner, that's a newspaper, the online paper, and you go to columnists, a little tab up at the top, and you push it down, you'll see Doug Papa. You'll see I wrote about 120 stories so far since the 2 years when I started writing for him on different things. You'll see all the stories, and you can just keep going back on older, newer, and you could pull all of them up. The Sylvester Stallone stories, like I said, the first one was, did Sylvester Stallone molest his half-sister? The follow-up with all the other information that I got was Sylvester Stallone hush money leaves unanswered questions. Then I wrote another story. It was titled Sylvester Stallone is a gun-toting hypocrite. And how that story came. No, that's not funny.
No, I just love your title.
I don't make that. I do bad titles when I write the story. The paper always changes them because they're the experts.
Right.
Okay? So I write the story. They make up good titles. So that story with the Sylvester Stallone as a gun-toting hypocrite, that came around because, I'm pro-Second Amendment. I'm not a fanatic about it, but I own guns. I've been, around guns all my life. So I started doing more research and found out that Sylvester Stallone, for 30 years, is one of the biggest anti-Second Amendment and advocates of gun control in Hollywood. I mean, he's to the extreme, to the point where he's been on the record, and this is in my story about that, where he said that the Second Amendment should be repealed. No American citizen should possess handguns, and assault rifles should be banned and all this. And he's done this for 30 years. Well, that's well and fine. That's, people don't like the Second Amendment in the United States. That's your opinion. Everybody has their opinion. But I found out through sources that he's a stinking liar. He's a hypocrite. Because in the late 80s or 90s, he applied for a concealed weapons permit. I think it was Alhambra Police Department, and he got it, and so did Brigitte Nielsen when he was married to her. Now, in 2004, he applied for a concealed weapons permit from the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Office. Now, I have started to go to apply to get the report, the stuff from him, because it's public information. And the people who were telling me said he owns guns. He owns multiple handguns. And I said, wow, the guy that wants to confiscate everybody's handguns, of course, except for his own, and everybody shouldn't carry a gun and own one except for Mr. Stallone. So I said, I got to get this. So a retired L.A. County sheriff that I was corresponding to said, yeah, go ahead and they have to give it to you. But then he said, and I can't remember this guy's name because I forgot to give him credit in the story. There was a gentleman on one of the pro-gun websites that actually, and that's what the former cop told me, he said, don't even bother going through there. Somebody already did the work for you. And he goes, go to this website. They're all over the website. And I can't remember the gentleman's name. I'm sorry, sir. I mean, I know I didn't put your name in the story, and he got a little upset. But the actual concealed weapon paperwork and application, including the handguns that he said he owned with the serial numbers, this gentleman out in California already got through FOIA, through the LA Sheriff's Office, and he posted it online. So I used that in my story, and I actually listed the handguns with the serial numbers, and I blasted them out of the water. Because I said, now you're a liar and you're a hypocrite. You want to take everybody's guns away except yours. That. So at the end of the story, I was putting stuff there, and I said, it was the way I closed it, and I'm just going to paraphrase, and I'm going to do that words, but it was something like, did most 99% of gun owners in America, lawful gun owners, never commit a crime with the weapons? And that comes from FBI statistics, and that's true. And I put this little section in, but I can't elaborate too much, but he knows what I'm talking about. So Stallone, I don't even call him Mister anymore, because to me he's not even a man. Stallone, if you listen to me, read that story again that you already read, and you'll see the last paragraph, and I say, I'd like to ask Sylvester Stallone a question. Have you ever threatened anybody with a firearm or used a firearm in an inappropriate manner? Now, Mr. Stallone knows exactly what I'm talking about, and I'm not going to elaborate any further. Somewhere down the road, that will be another story. So I wrote the story, and I think it got like 6,000 hits just overnight on Facebook, because there were a lot of people who were fans of Sylvester Stallone. The Rambo movies, all his movies, and I put that in the story, all his movies promote guns and gun violence. That's where he made his millions from. And I even put that in there. Being that you're such a hypocrite, why don't you take all the millions of dollars that you made from your movies that promote guns and gun violence, which you say you're against, and why don't you give it to all the victims in the United States of mass shootings? I put that in the story. Not to say that I'm not anti-Second Amendment, but he is. But yet he makes his money by promoting guns and gun violence in his movies, and then he doesn't want to do away with the Second Amendment, and he don't think people should own handguns. But yet, while he's been saying this for 30 years, he owned handguns, and since 2004, he had a concealed weapons permit from the LA County Sheriff's Office. And I even put something in there about that. Now, Lee Baca, I don't know if he's still in prison. He was the sheriff for years in LA, and I think he was indicted on corruption charges, and he went to prison. But he had a habit, through my research, of handing out concealed weapons permits to celebrities in California like they were a piece of paper. And I put in my story, how is it that celebrities very easily in California, which is a whole different Republican country of its own, you can't even get a concealed weapons permit, that these celebrities get these concealed weapons permits so easy and a regular citizen can't? Is it that money talks and BS walks? So what's going on? But this is all my story. You could read. And this title, Sylvester Stallone is a gun-toting hypocrite. So I wrote that story, and I heard he wasn't happy about that. And then the fourth story I wrote was the following year. You know, anybody that messes with kids and abuses women, to me, you know, I don't believe in abortion. You know, you don't mess with kids. That really gets to me.
Amen,
so
brother.
I started thinking about the story that I wrote, the second story, about what happened to his sister, okay? And when I'll be honest with you, when I talked to some of the sources who were talking to me through working with that story, it was emotional.
Sure.
Because what they were describing and what happened to the, you know, his sister and all this type of stuff. And, you know, I cry too. Things get to me. You know, people don't like it, too bad. And so I thought, you know, I got to follow up on that story where I put the first paragraph in the first story I wrote about the incident with the 16-year-old girl and stuff in the Hilton. So I got a hold of John, retired cop. He was out here. He was living out here. And he's in his 80s now. And I said, listen, I want to do a story just on that incident. Can you give me a copy of the police report? And, you know, he said, well, yeah, you can have it, but I don't know where it is. He says, I have it somewhere, but it's probably in like 50 boxes in the garage. So over a period of months, he was looking, couldn't find nothing. So then sometime last year, he moved out of state. He's in the East Coast. And he says, well, if I find it when I get back, when I unload boxes, I'll send you the report. Great, because that's what I want. That's the one that I saw 25 years prior. So anyway, long story short, he moves, he goes back east, he calls me up excited one day, he goes, hey, I found the report. He says, I'll make a copy of it, but I'm going to, you know, truncate, black out names and stuff, because, you know, if it gets out, they don't want people knocking on people's doors and stuff. I said, I just want the content. I know what happened. Okay, send the content. So thing comes in, FedEx, I get it. And I sit down, and that prompted me to write the story last year, which is the basis for everything that's going on today. I had the original police report exclusive to me and to the paper when we wrote it. It was my story. I broke the story about him and his allegations that he molested his half-sister for years. And I put basically some parts of, we didn't publish the police report, and but we worded it because it was so graphic the paper didn't want to put the graph, so we toned it down a little, but it got across to people what he did to this 16-year-old girl, and they published the story. Nothing happened. I know the paper sent it out to national media, and they said we're gonna get calls up and down. This is like the biggest thing and all this type of stuff. And no calls came in. And I was a little upset. And because it 30 years have gone by. Nevada doesn't have like California passed. Statute of limitations on sex crimes. Well, Nevada doesn't have it. This happened 30 years ago. So the only way he would ever be scrutinized, for lack of better words, is in the court of public opinion. And so the story came out, and nothing happened. So the other day I was writing, I wrote 35 stories so far on the Las Vegas massacre, and we could talk about that later. Okay. But anyway, I saw all this stuff coming out with the sex and all this stuff, and then it bothered me about this thing last night. I said, you know what? I'm going to take the police report, and I'm going to transcribe it myself, and I'm going to leave the blanks where the names would be, and I just do the story. And I did that, I think, a week ago. And then they titled it something else, because the one that came out last year was titled, I'm trying to remember what the title was, Sylvester Sloan and Bodyguard, involved in group sex with 16-year-old police say. It was something like that. So they did one the other day, and was another title similar to that. And nothing happened. And then all of a sudden, I started, because all this other stuff's coming out, people started reading the story that I did last year and the one I did last week. So I started getting some calls, and I got a call from Inside Edition, and I got a call from, his name was Alan Butterfield from the Daily Mail. And both of them wanted a copy of the police report. And I said, and I'd never released it, okay, since I had it. And neither did the paper, because they got a copy too. Now it's, I make sure all the names and the victims' names were, blacked out. Because when I spoke to the victim for the story last year, it took me a couple of months to track her down. I'm not going to tell you how I tracked her down, but I did. And then once I found her, I had to go through family, and she was debating what she was going to talk. She's now a 40-year-old woman. She told me, she don't have a police report, and what she described to me was consistent 30-year-old police report. So that's all in the story I wrote last year. Before I forget, I'm 62. I'll be 63 next month. Sometime I don't want to forget stuff. But before I forget, what's unique about this case? And, I believe all these women that are coming out talking, they're getting harassed. They call them names because they're going after the politicians and celebrities and making it up. Sure. Can some people be lying? Sure. But not everybody. Okay. And you don't attack the victim unless you got some type of proof, because it's very hard for a woman to come out. I don't care if you're coming out 20 years after it happened, 30 years after it happened, or 3 weeks after it happened, to come out and talk that you were sexually assaulted or raped by a man is very hard for a woman to do. So, you got to look at it and put that in perspective when these people come out and say, this is what happened to me. So I'm just bringing it up for a point. But getting back to the story with Stallone, the Stallone story is this. As long as I've been alive, I think this is one of the best sexual assault allegation cases that I've ever seen. And you're going to say, people say, why is that, Doug? Well, I'll tell you why. Because this woman never asked for money. She never asked for fame. She didn't even want to talk to me. She's been anonymous, okay? I know who she is. I know where she lives, okay? I spoke to her several times this week. But here's the point I'm trying to make. That after this incident happened in 1986, they immediately called the police. Okay, they were interviewed by the police. She was interviewed by the SALT detectives. She was in town with a girlfriend of hers, and the chaperones were her girlfriend's mother and father. They sat in on the interview when she was being interviewed by the sex assault unit, assuming the sex crimes detail, whatever Metro calls it back then, when they were interviewing her. And when I talked to her, I said, why didn't you press charges? And I'll call her Jane Doe, and her name is not Jane Doe. And I asked Jane, I says, why didn't you press charges? And she wanted to, but she was so traumatized from the event that two detectives talked to her, is what she told me. There was a male and there was a female. And the female detective basically scared the hell out of her. Said that, you know, Stallone is powerful, he's an actor, he's upcoming, he's got his high-priced attorneys, he's going to drag you through the mud, basically going to look like you're a whore. And, you know, now you're telling that to what, this is the victim telling me, okay, to a 16-year-old girl who just was, for all intents and purposes, I call it, gang raped by a 40-year-old man and a 27-year-old bodyguard, and they had oral sex with her. Stallone allegedly masturbated in front of her, according to what she told me, which is also in the police report. Now, the girl is traumatized, only 16 years old, and then you, allegedly, according to her, you have the detective scaring the hell out of her that they're going to drag you through the mud. So she decided she didn't want to prosecute. That was the deciding factor why she didn't prosecute. Okay, so you say, what's the point here? Well, the point is that victim is a 48-year-old, or 49 today. She's still alive. The police report from 30 years ago is a copy of the original police report that the sergeant from the sexual assault detail has, and he's still alive. I spoke, when I wrote the story, the mother of the girlfriend who sat in on the interview, and she corroborated what the victim said, and also said, that detective even scared the hell out of me. That's why we didn't do anything. She's still alive, okay? So you have a woman who was assaulted 30 years ago, was a 16-year-old. She's an adult woman today. She's still alive. The police report from 30 years ago corroborates what happened to her 30 years ago. The detective who ran, was the supervisor in the sexual assault detail, who knew about the investigation, he's still alive. The mother of her girlfriend, who sat in on the interview, she's still alive. So this is a very unique case, okay? And I'm telling you, I got interviewed by ABC last night. They were over here, one of the local affiliates. And I looked at the camera, and I don't know if they put it on the air or not. And I said, you want to say anything? And I said, yes. I look right at the camera, and I'll say this right now here. I would like to ask Stallone one question. Stallone, if a 40-year-old man did what you allegedly did, and I know you did it, I know the woman's telling the truth, to one of your teenage daughters, number one, how would you feel and what would you do? Because I'll tell you, if that was my daughter back in 1986 and him and his bodyguard did what this victim said, told me she did, Stallone wouldn't have had a career after 1986. He wouldn't even be on this earth. So when I sat to the camera last night, there's one thing that really ticks me off, and that's anybody that messes with kids and anybody that thinks they have the power and the money to do what they want to do because they can get away with it because of their fame and because of their money. So that's what I got to say on the Stallone thing. And then going back to the sister, okay, you look at it this way. She alleged in those court documents that he raped her, he had sexual intercourse with her, all kinds of sex while she was growing up. He was like a parent figure to her. And what does he do after she dies in 2012 of cancer? The mother comes out and says she was a drug addict. They deny all this stuff. She's not anymore alive to defend herself. But what did he do back in 1987 when those allegations came out? He did a settlement with her. He gave her $2 million to keep her mouth shut because none of these documents were ever supposed to see the face, the light of day. He gave her $2 million lump sum, paid her $66,000 every month for the rest of her life, and then he gave her $50,000 a year for medical costs if she wanted to go. Now, when I wrote my story, this is a pretty important, to me, it was pretty important. There was a clause, and I printed that in the story when I put all the documents in. There was a clause in the settlement that said this, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't know the exact words, that Tony Anfalitti and her husband can talk about this, but they can't talk about it to anybody else, and she can talk about what happened to her to therapists. Okay? Now, that clause is in there. Why is that important? Because people who are victims of sexual abuse have normally go through counseling. And, of course, if you're going through counseling with a therapist, a psychologist, a psychiatrist, you have to tell them what happened to you.
Sure.
So you have to talk about the incident. And that's why they put that exception clause in there, that that's the only people she can talk to. And her husband was also bound by the settlement agreement, from the way I remember, that he also couldn't tell anybody about it, because she's obviously going to tell her husband what happened. That's in the clause. So anyway, he pays the sister off. The documents were sealed in court. They were never supposed to see the light of day. And then in 2013, somehow somebody, the New York Post, page 6, that that's what happened. But they didn't have the documents that I had, all the documents. They didn't have a copy of the check and a bunch of other stuff that, you know, that I still have to this day. So that's what prompted me to do the story. So when all this stuff came out, like I said, I gave 2 copies of the report that I had. Of course, it's all blacked out with the victim's name and all the witnesses' names. Inside Edition wanted a copy. I gave it to them. And then Alan Butterfield called me up. I talked to him. He says, yeah, I'm a reporter with the Daily Mail, biggest newspaper in England, and reputable and this type of stuff. So I gave him a copy of the report. And he came out here the other day. You know, he wanted to pay me money to let him, to give him the name of the informant. And I said, well, that's not going to happen, because last year, when I wrote that story, and I can't remember, I don't think it was the Inquirer, the Globe or Examiner, one of those tabloids, I got a call from somebody, and they were offering like really substantial money for me to give them the name of the victim. And I said, you can offer me $1 million. You know, sure, everybody needs money, but you're not getting it, because then goes my credibility. It's like I worked 9 years undercover. If I had to dime out my informants, and I never did, I never gave my informants' names up to anybody, you're done as an investigator, especially right. When you're working, you know, organized crime and narcotics. You don't do that. Same thing when you're writing, it's principal. You're a journalist, you're writing a story, you know, you're writing a story as an investigative journalist, people are talking to you in sources. I'll never name the sources who gave me the documents against Stallone, the ones I talked to. I'll never release the name of the victim. And I talked to her the other day. I says, if you make the determination that you want to go public with this thing, then I will help you find an attorney to look out for your interest and everything. You don't have to. It's up to you. So that may happen. It may not happen in the future. So my point being is, he had enough money to pay off his sister, thinking nobody was going to ever know about those allegations. But it blew up in his face in 2013. Now, in 2012, she passed away. I think she was 48, 47 of cancer. So she wasn't around to defend herself. Okay? Now, I also heard, and I from reputable sources, and I haven't confirmed it, but this is what they alleged to me, okay? When she passed away in 2012, Stallone never had a memorial service for his half-sister. I was told by my sources that her ashes remained in the funeral parlor for quite some time until some friends got together and gave her some type of memorial service sometime later on. Now, I look at it like this. What kind of man, after his sister dies of cancer, if this is true, would let her ashes stay there and completely forget about it and not even give her a memorial service? It was, from my understanding, it was the friends who gave the memorial service way sometime later. So that's what I was told. So, you know, you leave it at that, you look like, well, yeah, it's unbelievable. You know, it's unbelievable.
Well, okay, yeah, just to be clear, now our guest is Doug Papa. That's Doug Papa. The article that appeared in the Daily Mail yesterday, complete with the police report that the Daily Mail published, went from your hands to the Daily Mail, and you're not mentioned in here at all.
They didn't originally, and I was pretty steamed yesterday.
Sure.
I even had some choice words with Alan Butterfield. I said, he better not even call me up anymore. So between that and I think Bill McIntosh got involved and sent some stuff out on the internet saying, hey, what's up, Daily Mail? How can this be an exclusive when Doug Papa did it last year and that was his police report and blah, blah, blah? Well, the paper, the editor from the Baltimore Post Examiner, after me screaming at him, finally made contact with, I guess, the editor or the owner of the Daily Mail. And he said, well, they're going to credit the Baltimore Post-Examiner. So I pulled up the story, and way on the bottom of the story, there was this thing, a link, and it says, for more information on this, go to the Baltimore Post-Examiner. I says, well, what the hell is that? You know? they didn't do anything. So more pressure, and then they end up putting in the story that Doug Papa broke the story in 1986. They didn't say anything that they got the police report that they said was exclusive to them. They even watermarked it and put it into their story with the Daily Mail watermark.
Yeah.
I gave that 2-3 days ago to Alan Butterfield, and I was under the impression that he was going to at least give me, you know, some attribution and say, hey, this came from the guy that broke the story, but he didn't do it. You know, he didn't even mention me at first, and that's the kind of backstabbing journalism that they are over there, and that's well and fine, but he will never have any more, he will never have anything to do with me anymore, neither will the Daily Mail. I think it's a disgrace. But it's all out now. I had numerous telephone interviews this morning. ABC, like I said, the local affiliate was out here last night, and that went online. German television is doing a Skype interview with me tomorrow, and there's like 5 or 6 more set up for tomorrow night and Sunday. Okay? I'll say this. Okay? So, Stallone, and I call him that. I don't call him Mister because he's not a man to me. Stallone has been all over the internet saying, denying these charges. So what he is in essence doing is calling the victim a liar. So I'm going to tell Mr. Stallone something right now. 40 years investigations, criminal investigator of the year in 1986. I interviewed that woman. I'm the only one in the country or the world that interviewed the victim. She is telling the truth, and you, Mr. Stallone, are the liar. And you know that you know you're a liar, and you know that at some point other women are going to come forward, because you know exactly what the hell I'm talking about. And I will leave it at that on the Stallone story, unless you want to ask me some questions.
Well, okay, no, this is, so folks, what you're hearing is really from, look, here's what I feel about the Daily Mail. When I read that report earlier today, my first question was, knowing the backstory, but, you know, the fact that you are such a decorated and highly respected law enforcement, former law enforcement source, that would have lended a whole another level of credibility to, and importance to the story. In your involvement, so shame on them, and thank you for doing what you've done to expose this monster. If assuming, of course, this which is, you know, what the police report is, well, a monster. Period. In my opinion, this is wow. I'm blown away by this. You got to be taking blood pressure medication, man. I'll tell you something.
I've been involved. I'll tell you, yesterday, you would not want to be in my apartment yesterday when that Daily Mail story came out. Somebody said, hey, they just broke the big exclusive. I said, what? And I read it. I was livid, okay? I broke the story last year. That police report I got as an exclusive from the cop who gave it to me. That was... What they should have done was saying, if you want to redo the story, fine. You say, listen, we're doing this story because of all the stuff that's coming up right now. Here's a police report that we obtained from a former cop who writes for the Baltimore Post-Examiner. It was part of his story that he broke last year. We were publishing the report. You know, fine. But at least you say how you got it and where you came from. Now, he went out and he interviewed John, the retired sergeant from the Las Vegas Police Department, and John said, yeah, it's all true. You know, it's a real story. I gave it to Doug, whatever he said. And, yeah, you can use my name. So he put his name in there. But how did he get John's name? He got it from me 2 days ago and didn't mention to me. So When I write stories, and I write a lot of stories, if I'm going to use something that another paper wrote or another reporter wrote, I'm either going to quote the paper, or I did one the other day, and I quoted the Las Vegas Review-Journal. I'm not going to say, hey, I got this information, and this is what happened, and not mention where it came from, unless I got the information. So that's what you do. It's called professionalism. And they didn't do that. And then the end, they end up putting my name in and said, yeah, you know, he broke the story last year because they were getting so much flack. But you know what? It's over and done with. It's all over the world. It's international, this story. I broke the story. I wrote it. The Baltimore Post-Examiner published it last year. We did another story a couple of days ago when I actually transcribed the report with the blanks, and that came out. You know, I got the police report, and I gave it only to Inside Edition and to Butterfield from the Daily Mail. And now they published it on their site with the story, and they watermarked it Daily Mail, exclusive. Well, yeah, okay, it's exclusive, but you got it from me.
Yeah,
okay?
Exactly.
And it's really not exclusive because that was the basis of my story in 2016. So anyway, you know, it's over and done with. I cool down. I don't usually get upset anymore. There's nothing in this world that I get upset about anymore. I'll be 63 next month. I've been through enough stuff in my life, either on the police department, with the casinos. You know, I lost the job 10 years with the Riviera because they rigged the slot machine, and I turned them into gaming, and I'm banned from the casino business. I can't get a job. I can never get a job on a police department after what I did 25 years ago. So, you know, when I talk, I'm not BSing, okay? And when I write stories about police integrity and corruption and coming forward and breaking the blue wall of silence, I'm not talking out my butt. I'm talking because I lived it and I did it. I would never tell anybody to do something that I didn't do. So
I'll tell you,
that's a long story.
That's fantastic. Our guest is Doug Papa. Please stay with us over the break. 3 minute network break. Exposing police corruption. Exposing this Sylvester Stallone. Oh my goodness. You've got to, and by the way, follow Doug Papa on Twitter. Brand new Twitter account. Be one of the first to follow him. I just did. Wow. More on the other side of network break with Doug Papa.
Yeah, we're going to get into Las Vegas on the other side.
Incredible.
And any
I'm
going to
stand up for a couple of minutes because my
All right.
We'll be right back after this network break. Don't go anywhere.